Coming up, Lab and I recap a wild week at TPC Sawgrass and the redemptive powers of victory. Welcome to the Golf Central Podcast presented by Callaway Golf. It was a great week for Team Callaway at the PGA Tour's flagship event as Taylor Gooch, John Rahm, and 2017 Players Champion Siwoo Kim all finished in the top 10. All three of these players have an epic speed driver, Callaway irons, Callaway Jaws wedges, and an Odyssey putter in their bags. Gooch's 14 Callaway clubs made 22 birdies this week on the way to a top five finish. Lab, you and I both were at TPC Sawgrass on Sunday. We were both entertained. I think I can say that. I think I could speak for you on that front. But you wrote a really good story on Sunday night on golfchannel.com about Justin Thomas, who has had a difficult year for a variety of reasons, and what this victory means to him.
Thank you. We did have a great week at the Players Championship. That was the first time we were together in the same press tent since what, the Augusta National and the November Masters. Dinner.
You and I had
dinner. It was socially distanced and outdoors, but we did have dinner as we slowly get close to our normal lives once again. And you're right. And I think, you know, it was kind of a tricky story to write, to be honest with you, on Sunday night, because JT has kind of held close to this vest, you know, what his feelings and what his emotions are now. I think he's been a little bit more protective when talking to the media. And so when you saw the outpouring of emotion, not just from him, but also, you know, his family, his dad, his mom, his girlfriend, even his putting coach was a little bit emotional as well. And so there's obviously multiple layers to the story. I think a lot of the emotion was the fact that he was reminded that his grandfather, Paul, who passed away on the eve of the final round of the Phoenix Open last month, was not there to celebrate. That's I would say, a main reason why, in particular, Mike Thomas was so emotional. That was his father. And seeing his dad tear up kind of made Justin do the same. But I think it's also just the toll that these last couple of months have put on JT. He himself said that it's been a crappy couple of months and that he was really just waiting for something good to happen, something positive to happen. We talked about at the time, the homophobic slur he uttered in the very first event in Hawaii. And it eventually became, you know, an issue of how much penance is sufficient, because he'd apologized profusely. A sponsor had dropped him. He had said all the right things, and that he still seemed to carry the weight of that mistake with him. And then it was only compounded by the fact that then his grandfather died. And then a couple weeks after that, you had Tiger Woods, who was in the horrific car accident. And Tiger is one of JT's now closest friends, obviously his boyhood idol. And so all of these issues were compounding on a 27-year-old who, entering 2021, had a gilded life and career. There's nothing that has gone wrong in his career. He's transitioned from a junior phenom to a college star to a professional superstar. And it now at age 27 is a lock for the Hall of Fame. Nothing had ever gone wrong. And so this was really the first time that he's dealt with public backlash. First time he's dealt with really losing a family member who was close to him. The first time that he's dealt with something as horrific as what Tiger experienced in LA. And so for him to overcome some of the adversity, some of it, of course, which was self-inflicted, I thought was a testament and something that both he and his father, Mike Thomas, said should be a really big breakthrough for him, because now he can move forward and focus on golf in a better headspace.
And you and I talked about this Sunday afternoon. Like, it was kind of as he made the turn and he just was playing fabulous golf and he was putting himself in a position that it seemed like this was almost inevitable, as well as Lee Westwood had played, as impressive as Bryson DeChambeau had been. And the problem with the idea of what you wanted to write, what you should have written, what you ended up writing, is that there is going to be another side of this conversation, right? There is going to be the cancel culture who says that it doesn't matter what he does on the golf course, that he still, that homophobic slur still came out of his mouth. There are still people who offended. There were still people who were hurt by this. And I'm not sitting here trying to pretend that that's not the case. And I'm not trying to pretend that a victory at the Players Championship or anywhere else is going to fix all of these things for these people, or for JT for that matter, because he still has things. I mean, he lost major sponsors because of this. And they probably did the right thing on that front, simply because of in the world we live in, they're absolutely right. There is no place in sports or anywhere else for those types of phrases, those types of words, that type of behavior. All that being said is, I think just emotionally, for JT, just as a person and a player, who you're absolutely right. I mean, he could not have been more apologetic. He could not have apologized more or more profusely, or in my opinion, more honestly. In this particular case, it does. And I agree with Mike. I think this shows that he has reached a point where he is ready to move on. That I really think, and he probably is not comfortable admitting this, that it impacted him. And I can say that because there's a colleague at Golf Channel who I watched went through something very, very similar. And I watched it impact him. You're looking around like, where am I going with this? Right. And he probably wouldn't even like me saying this, but having covered the story and having been someone who is now his friend, when Tripp Eisenhower had his issues when he hit the bird and he killed the bird and he was very apologetic and he handled it the very same way. However, it cost him pretty much the rest of his career because you can't really get away from something like that. And so I would just say that in JT's case, it is impressive that he has been able to work through what has been a very, very difficult time for a number of different reasons. And we saw a JT on Sunday that was refreshed. And I think we saw a JT on Sunday that seems like he is ready to move on.
And, you know, Rex, you and I both, we tend to walk the back nines of these big tournaments, not just to kind of see how the final groups are going to play, but also kind of to get some color. And so when I went out there, I had full intentions of writing a Lee Westwood story. And then Justin Thomas birdied 9, birdied 10, eagled 11, birdied 12. And it became pretty obvious, even with a short miss that JT had on 14, that he was going to win the golf tournament. And so what I was really curious to see was that I wanted to see what the fan reaction was. Because in our little media world, when every time Justin Thomas sits down for one of these virtual news conferences, he is inevitably asked about the quote unquote distractions. Some of them obviously had been put on himself and some of them were off course that he had no control over. And so I wanted to see if fans were reminding him of it, if it was still as the support was as unwavering as it has been in the past. And you got to keep in mind, TPC Sawgrass is probably not on the same scale, but at least close to the vibe that you get at TPC Scottsdale in terms of these are boisterous fans. This was roughly 10,000 a day. It sure seemed like it was more than that, but it was roughly 10,000 fans a day. The most the tours had for a spectator footprint in 9 months. And so if anyone was going to get drunk and start heckling Justin Thomas, it was going to be at a tournament like the Players Championship, right? And yet, walking that back nine with him, I didn't hear a single barb. I didn't hear a single jeer. I didn't hear a single heckle that was directed toward him. Everyone was cheering for him. Everybody. It was universal. And so I think it was also a good reminder that we can get caught up in these narratives and some of these social media hot takes. And I think it was warranted because when you ask Justin Thomas, he's the one who still says that he's dealing with the fallout. He's the one who's still dealing with the backlash. He's the one who said that he had to seek professional help to work through some of these problems with a psychologist. And so it was true, but I think it's also a reminder that sports fans generally are a forgiving bunch. They want to see great shots. They want to see players like Justin Thomas, who's the number three, now number two ranked player in the world, do things that they cannot do. And that's exactly what JT did when he shot 132 on the weekend, tied the lowest score ever at the Players Championship and won yet another big title. I think he's like the fourth player now who has won a major, the Players, the WGC, and the FedEx Cup. Like it's pretty elite company that he's already in.
As we mentioned, we actually were together last week. We had the opportunity to have a couple meals together. However, I think we owe the audience an apology because when we taped last week's podcast, we thought we were being clever. We went to the same room where we had taped the last
symmetry. The symmetry. Yes. It was undeniable.
We thought we were being clever, but we owe an apology to everyone because apparently the audio of that, because we were in the same room together, and I guess there was some bad audio, specifically at GoGo Gadget Willie. Willie, who sent a tweet out, "Oh, the audio quality, hashtag echo, otherwise fab." And Willie, your
thank you, Willie.
Your emoji game is very, very strong. Lab tweeted you back. I'm sorry I did not, but I agree with Lab. Hate to hear that. Appreciate the kind words. We're going to try to fix it. I am now wearing.
We love you, Willie.
Yes, I am now wearing my microphone in my face to try to make sure that this is better moving forward. And you mentioned the crowds, and I do want to talk about the crowds. It was an interesting Sunday. It was fun to get back to something closer to normal. It might have been a little uncomfortable for some people who were watching at home. I will say that having walked quite a bit of that golf course last week, I think the vast majority of people adhere to most social distancing guidelines. Maybe Sunday around 17 seemed like it was a little crowded, but otherwise I think everyone was wearing their mask.
Yeah, I mean, there's a clear way to get around the mask mandate. That's to buy one of the $12 beers and just nurse it for like 8 hours. Yeah. Oh, sure. I'm gonna put this to my lips and take a sip. I will say, I thought the mask compliance, it got worse as the week went on, but I think overall it was still very good to excellent, somewhere in that range. And it made me hopeful for the future. We can continue talking about that. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. I think I echo those comments simply because, and I'll give the tour credit. They had the people walking around with the signs that didn't say, you know, silence or quiet, that said mask on, which I thought was pretty, pretty clever. They had people walking around politely asking, please put your mask on, sir. Please put your mask on, madam, whatever the case may be. But the one part I wanted to transition from, and you're right, I did not hear anyone heckling JT coming down the stretch about things that you and I as media members probably get caught up in. The one thing that I did hear, and I think you're going to agree with this, that when it comes to Bryson, people are flocking to him for all the obvious reasons. He's crazy long. He's doing all these experiments about trying to gain more speed. He's playing very, very good golf. I don't want to dismiss that at all. And I said this in a radio interview the other day, and I really feel it. When crowds are now around JT, they want to see him do something special. They want to see Tiger Woods do something special on the golf course. As I walked with Bryson last week, I felt like that crowd just wanted to see the bearded lady.
I think I tweeted it out. Like, they don't even cheer anymore. They don't, they don't clap. They literally just laugh. Like, they want to see him teed up really high, swing really hard, and just take on some of these absolutely ridiculous lines over trees. And he was doing that. And so the sound you hear afterward isn't applause. It isn't a go get him, Bryson. It's just laughter. People think it's funny. Like, it's funny to see this behemoth of a man, who actually has trimmed down about 10 to 12 pounds, this behemoth of a man swinging 135 miles an hour and hit at 350. That was not a golf course that he should have been doing that on. And yet he did. And so it is a little bit like a carnival act. That's not to take away from what Bryson is doing, because I think it's absolutely incredible.
I mean, like I said, when I say the bearded lady, when I call him the bearded lady, this has nothing to do with him. I mean, I think I respect him more now after last week than I probably ever have, simply because his dedication to his craft, he wants to be so much better at his job than most people ever are at their jobs. And I appreciate that. Like, I am very, very much a fan of Bryson DeChambeau. Now, for that specific reason, this has more to do with just the sideshow that he has become in golf. This has more to do with the fact that people are just there to see the crash on turn three at Daytona now. Because I think when you look at what he is able to do to golf courses, and the specific example that I want to give is on 18. Like, everyone was just cheering and just berating him to hit driver there, and he wouldn't do it. And he talked about it one day afterwards, that the pressure not to hit driver and to tee up a four iron, and you don't pull off that four iron, it's not going to go well with the crowd. Like, suddenly there is a whole new added level of pressure.
Like, what happens on Bay Hill over the weekend if on that sixth hole, if he determined, because of the wind, that the smart play was actually like just hit three wood at the bunker, and you would still just have a long iron in. He would have, like, as you said, he would have been berated by the fans. Oh, yeah. And so there is going to be a little bit of a peer pressure element. I will say, in sideshow is a good way to describe it. I was standing by the range one of the rounds. I think it was on Saturday. I wasn't standing on the range, of course, standing by the range. That's an important distinction.
Adjacent.
Not run afoul of the tour guidelines. But Bryson's manager, Connor, was just there waiting with his heavy backpack with all of his contraptions in it. He was waiting there for 20 minutes in a crowded gathered like two or three deep, just waiting there because he knew that that's where he's going to set up. Never mind the fact that Bryson's probably only going to hit like 10 drivers on the range. Like, he's not going to be wasting his energy and his exhaustive efforts on the practice tee before he goes out there. He's going to slowly, very slowly work up to hitting a driver, but they didn't care. They just wanted to stand there for the sole purpose of seeing him swing at 135 miles an hour. And I think that's going to continue as long as there's going to be fans on tour, especially when he gets to some of these tournaments where he can really let it rip. Augusta certainly comes to mind, where he can let it rip a little bit more than he was able to do at TPC Sawgrass.
It's absolutely that. It's like the 11 o'clock feeding for the penguins at the aquarium, and everyone gets there at 10:50 because you got to have to get a good seat. And so as soon as you saw Connor set up the backpack and everything else, oh, look,
he's coming.
About to get fed. Yes, he's coming. Yep. We have to get in line. Honey, get the kids quickly. Let's pull them over here, which is, I'm not even saying this is bad for golf. I mean, I'm not even trying to be derogatory. It's such a different lane, though, for the fans, for what he's bringing to the game. That being said, and it's amazing that for 3 days, I felt like Bryson dominated the conversation. And then the last, I don't know, 2 hours of the tournament, it suddenly switched and went to JT for all the right reasons because of the competition and what he was able to do on the golf course. Probably, though, when I look back to this week, I think most of us are going to look at what Rory McIlroy admitted to on Friday after missing the cut by, I'm estimating here, 300 million strokes.
And he missed the cut by 10 in the interest of facts. He missed a cut by 10, and he was 19 shots behind Lee Westwood after 36 holes. 19.
Yeah. So he missed the cut by a lot. And then he admits that the struggles that he's going through right now is because he, quote unquote, chased speed, and that he would be lying, he said, if he said that Bryson didn't have anything to do with this. And I think we've had this conversation a few times on this podcast that, look, when Tiger Woods started redefining the game in the 90s and early 2000s, there was a lot of players that looked at what Tiger was doing and said, yes, that's the way to do it. That's the way to win. This is the way we're going to make this work. I didn't think that there was many players doing that when it came to Bryson DeChambeau. But when Rory admitted that, you start thinking to yourself, I think everyone continues to tinker, maybe push the boundaries a little bit more than they would have otherwise because of what he's doing. And that to me is as fascinating as what Bryson has done on the golf course.
Yeah. I mean, we always knew that there was going to be a Bryson effect. We didn't know how drastic it was going to be. We didn't know how devastating it would be for some of the top players to abandon their games that were clearly world-class and chase something that, you know, especially in Rory's case, he didn't need. Rory has been one of the top five drivers on the PGA Tour essentially since his career started, but in particular over the past 4 or 5 years. He is always, if not the number one driver in terms of stroke gained off the tee, he is always inside the top five. And so he was trying to already build on what is the strength. It's not like, I remember talking to Robbie Shelton last week, who was one of the first timers at TPC Sawgrass, and he said he was really trying to add more distance. He wasn't trying to add more distance to get Bryson length. He was trying to add more distance because he carries the ball about 270 to 275 yards. And he has figured out that at most tour courses with how they're set up, he needed to carry it 280 to clear all the bunkers, right? That's a 10 to 15 yard difference that he wanted to pick up. He's not going from Rory, who wanted to go from 330 to 350. This was just a tour player who's just trying to feel like he could survive. And so for Rory, he has such glaring weaknesses in other parts of his game, whether it's his iron play over the past 6 to 9 months, wedge play has always kind of been his bugaboo. His putting is certainly very streaky. For him, I think that was the general reaction of, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why would you try to reinvent this when you already are basically dominating off the tee, almost as much as Bryson was? It just, to me, I think it speaks to a level of insecurity that even the top players in the world feel, where if they feel like, you know, someone else can gain just the slightest bit of advantage over them in what he had perceived as his greatest strength, I think it showed that not even Rory is immune to those types of feelings.
Well, and I kind of wrote this on Friday because I was curious. So I asked a lot of players, you know, did you follow Rory's path? Were you chasing Bryson? And to be clear here, I don't think anybody is drinking 4 protein shakes during a round of golf and eating 6,000 calories a day and trying to gain 50 pounds. No one's trying to do that. Like, I don't think that works for anyone outside of Bryson, or at least I don't think anyone has sort of wrapped their mind around how that works for anyone outside of Bryson. But speed? Yeah. Like, when you start just breaking the numbers down in whatever ball speed you need, 195, 190, 185, 180, whatever the case should be, all the way from Rory, who, as you pointed out, we both pointed out, like, look, he probably didn't need to pick up any distance. He was still one of the most dominant players with his driver, all the way down to Kevin Na, who I talked to about this, who could pick up tons and tons of distance if he wanted to. So I do think there is a Bryson effect. Maybe not, no one is going to do it like Bryson, but they're going to continue to push the boundaries. And I think he's only going to do it that much more. And I wanted to touch on what I wrote Sunday night, which was my feel-good story, which was Lee Westwood, a man of a certain age, back-to-back runner-up finishes on the PGA Tour, walked off the golf course and couldn't take the smile off his face, and admitted that he probably didn't have his best game on Sunday, didn't feel comfortable.
He was hitting it everywhere.
At 47 years old, I think he also admitted to some fatigue. The legs weren't working, the body wasn't working like he wanted to, and yet there was the smile on his face. He talked about going to Augusta on Monday with his son to play a few practice rounds. His son's going to caddy for him at the Masters. He talked about going to the Honda Classic this week and play there. I'm going to own this. Like, I'm going to fall down and let you just do a pile driver right on top of my head, because I said there was no way he was going to make the Ryder Cup team. And right now I can't imagine that Ryder Cup team without Lee Westwood.
First of all, you not only said that Lee Westwood wasn't going to be on the Ryder Cup team, and what has happened since then is Lee Westwood became the European number one, won the race to Dubai last year. Now back-to-back runner-up finishes on the PGA Tour. He's going to be on that team. But you also said in the year-end podcast that Victor Perez was a player who was not going to be on that team for Whistling Straits. I would agree that there's a chance that he doesn't qualify for that team or doesn't get picked for that team. But he also finished inside the top 10 at TPC Sawgrass. So you're very much looking at a 0-for-2 proposition on your European Ryder Cup picks. However,
At best, right now, I'm 0-for-1.5. I'm not giving you. Okay. I'll concede fine. Lee. Like, Lee is a feel good story.
We still got 6 months. Yeah, we no, got I'm 6 not, months.
I'm not giving that's you fine. Victor Perez. No, that's
how much? How much confidence did you have, however, that Lee Westwood could win on Sunday?
Not a lot. And I think that's for the reasons I just pointed out. At 47, 48 years old, it is very, very hard to compete.
He looked just fine the previous 3 days.
He did, but this is back-to-back weeks in contention. This isn't just back-to-back weeks of playing PGA Tour golf, which can be taxing on a 47-year-old as it is. This is back-to-back weeks in contention, which, as we all know, takes even more out of the body, physically, mentally, everything. And honestly, you could start – you saw him sort of dragging at the end of Saturday's round. I mean, it was hard to come up with a way that, okay, this is going to work out well for Lee. And I actually did talk about getting a scene, and I wish I could have written this, but it didn't play out the way I wanted it to. Bryson is on the range until 3 minutes before his tee time. 3 minutes hitting driver after driver after driver, just working himself into this frenzy. I mean, sweat's flying everywhere, spit's flying out of his mouth. Connor is standing there handing him balls, wiping down the club, the grip, because it's getting, you know, he's just sweating. I mean, he is just out there just about ready to kill the world. And Lee is on the green, just this picture of serenity, hitting 3-footers, smiling, laughing with his fiance, interacting with the crowd. Like, you could not have found two polar opposites to go head to head on a Sunday at a tournament.
Maybe Lee should have spent a little bit more time on the range, because he hit some awful, awful shots on the opening stretch, which certainly cost him the tournament. I will say, I do agree with you. It's one of the feel good stories of 2021, along with my boy Jordan Spieth's resurgence. It is the fact that he does seem to have this new lease on his professional career. He's been working with a mental coach. Obviously, having your fiance on the bag and traveling the world with you is going to free him up. And I just think he's taken an ownership of his life and his career. When you have a caddy and you're using your fiance, all of the decisions fall on you. And so he can be 100% committed to whatever he wants to do on the golf course, whether it's a club on a par 3 or his approach shot or the wind or reading a putt, because he's not getting information from anyone else. It is totally in his control. And I think in a lot of ways that really is freeing. And there's a sense now that at 47, 48, no one really, you know, expected him to be competitive any longer. When you talk back about the Ryder Cup, he was a non-playing assistant captain in 2018 Paris. In yeah. Paris. And so, you know, this is a player who I think is enjoying his renaissance and his resurgence as much as anyone. He's inside the top 20 in the world, but all these good vibes, all these good feelings, eventually on Sunday, it comes down to, can you handle the moment? Can your putting stroke handle the pressure?
Oh, he's still a bad putter. That hasn't changed. Can you like a good attitude and can you hit the shots? Change that.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, he still needs to get across the finish line. He's a top 20 player in the world, and you have to start looking at it in through that lens. This attitude's great. I think it's incredible to see him at this advanced age, professionally, still battling in what is the PGA Tour's premier event on a golf course. That is
against the deepest field of any
that he's going to play. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's amazing.
However, there's a big difference between doing that on Saturday night and doing that on Sunday night. And Lee Westwood, for all his good vibes, hasn't quite gotten there yet.
No, and I think he would be the first to tell you that. But there was an answer to a question that I asked him on Sunday that just kind of blew me away. As writers, we know when we get the good answer, like our eyes light up and you sort of start scribbling and your hand is shaking a little bit.
We start sweating, just kind of like Bryson does.
Just like Bryson on the range, just because
himself into a lather.
But his quote to me was, and I'm going to not do it justice, but it was, yes, my perspective is better because I'm just playing capital A game. Because there's so many other things in the world that matter right now, much more so than golf. And I don't think that you'll
perspective
find-
is a very powerful tool.
And again, not arguing with you about getting it done on Sunday. Now, I'm going to flip this because I knew you were going to throw the age thing out there in a man of a certain age. And I just wanted to point it out that there was the way we had to do Zoom calls last week is very, very similar to the way it's been ongoing. Lee Westwood got called in on Saturday.
I think it was an AirPods issue.
It could have been anything. But the beauty was, is when Ryan Labner, the young man of the entire media center, who takes great pride in pointing out how old everyone else is in the media center.
They are old.
You know, when it came time for him to talk, he could not talk, to the point that Lee Westwood just said, just scream your question. I'll probably hear it from where I am, because we were only about 100 yards from where he is in his room at that time. And then the very next person was Michael Bamberger, who's about 120 years old and could not be older. He's the oldest person in that media center.
And Michael Bamberger, of course, who was a terrific writer.
And he got it right.
And he got it right.
Did not get him. Yeah.
But he was the one who dropped the F bomb during one of the very first Zoom pressers we had at the memorial. That was one of the most infamous moments of this Zoom era, and which I am very much looking forward to ending. I think some of the rules and restrictions that us as reporters and writers have faced over these past 9 months, they seem to be coming, maybe not to an end. But they're certainly going to be relaxed a little bit. So we're looking forward to that. And this era, I think the PGA Tour players are kind of sick of it too. There's just a better banter that you can have. And I think it helps better tell their stories when everything's in person. Masks or not.
I'm going to let you get out of here. Give you 30 seconds of what's lab grilling.
Boy, so this week I bought some skirt steak. So we're going to throw that on the PK, a couple minutes aside, get that to the medium rare that we like.
You just you're just assuming the audience. Okay. The PK. Got it. Yeah.
Yeah. The PK grill. Assume.
Yeah. Okay. There it is.
And so I had actually a funny story. I had dinner, also socially distance outdoor, with Eamon Lynch. Eamon ordered a tenderloin. And Rex, do you want to know what how he ordered his steak?
How?
Medium well. Medium.
That's a crazy person.
I almost fell out of my chair. I almost fell out of it. I said, "Do you want my shoe instead? Because that's what it's going to taste like." I also think, in the interest of this podcast, you should let the people know that you stumbled into a $500 gift card, and you had me searching all over the.
But never mind.
Sure, stumbled. You had an opportunity, and I was searching. Far and wide to get you new grill, a new smoker that you could have, that you would have money left over You would have money left over. One of the Weber kettle grills that I found you would have been $160. You could have had $340 to spend on whatever you wanted. You could have gotten two. You could have gotten a grill and a smoker. And what did you get instead?
Half doors for my Jeep. That's what I've wanted for a long time.
You also wanted a grill and a smoker. We all know your wife is not going to let you get one.
Yeah, but if in the hierarchy of things she's not going to let me get, it was the doors that I knew I'm not going to be able to push over. Because eventually I have to buy a new grill because in Florida, they just, as you know,
they just from rust.
They just rust out. So of course, eventually.
Of course the PK does not rust because it's aluminum and high quality, which is why the price point is so much higher than a Weber. But we can talk about that another time.
Eamon Lynch is a crazy person. Nobody does that. Hey, @GoGoGadgetWilly. We did it for you.
We love you, Willie.
See you next week.